Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, Titanic Tuesday, on the horn, the 26th day of February, 2013. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, where you can find the Listen Live button and easily stream the content of the program if you care to listen live. Many of you care to listen in podcast, and of course that address is at WhiteRoseSociety.org, under the subdomain for this program, Head On with Bob Kincaid. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. If you're listening on a mobile device, we highly recommend the apps for smartphones and iPhones from TuneIn and from Stitcher. In particular, the TuneIn Pro app, which costs a couple of bucks, will allow you to record the program for yourself. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday, known as such, based upon the manifestation of Titanic wit, Titanic intellect, let's say intellect, as evinced by a certain right-winger who shall remain nameless, who informed his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking right-wing listeners that there are shells, seashells, in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah. The Horn is, of course, listener-supported radio. It doesn't happen without you. This has been a tough couple of months getting the year started, but there is some good news. We are actually within $300 of getting February and January shortfall taken care of, which kind of makes sure that there will be a March, which is important. Now, we'll start the program off this evening. Sal just contacted me and said, I'm putting $50 on the table to match the next 50 that come in. So thank you very kindly, Sal. Sal is a big help toward keeping all of this going. He's got a $50 challenge out there, $50, he'll match it. Doesn't matter if it comes in 10 times 5, 5 times 10, 2 times 25, 30 and 20, 40 and 10. No matter. The first $50 that comes in, Sal will match. And that'll take us to being within $200 of making this month's fundraising goal, which is how we get a march. We live by month to month. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and there is a great deal of stupidity, right-wing stupidity, to pick up on. Some even perhaps could be considered leftovers from last night's Moran Monday. But before we do that, because of where I live, and because of the struggle in which I and so many others are involved, the struggle against mountaintop removal, and remember, if you want to help us end this ongoing dystopian nightmare in Appalachia, the easiest way to do it is simply to go to acact.org and learn everything you can about the only bill, the only proposed law out there that would end mountaintop removal in our lifetimes. Also, while at acact.org, you can go and send a message to your member of Congress. And, you know, they get a lot, so it doesn't matter if you... No, don't... Hey, I already did that, Bob. No, send them another one. Send the ACAT site around and tell other people to send messages to their members of Congress. This is grassroots activism at its very purest and at its very finest. Because, see, here in Appalachia, we waited around for a long, long, long time for all the smart folks who kept telling us they were going to help us end mountaintop removal to go ahead and do it. And after a while, we looked up and said, you know what? They ain't ending mountaintop removal. Time for the hillbillies to do something. And so the Ag Act is first and foremost an act of hillbilly self-determination. And when you act on behalf of the Ag Act, when you go to agact.org, send a note to your representative or your senators, when you send it around to your neighbors, when you talk it up amongst your friends, no matter where you are a part of that hillbilly self-determination. Much like the horn itself, the Ag Act is operating on a shoestring. But that's okay. When he was facing down Goliath, David didn't look back at the children of Israel and say, people, you didn't tell me he was that big. You didn't tell me he had a whole army behind him. You didn't tell me he had a shield and a helmet and a sword. You didn't tell me his feet were bigger than my whole leg. No. He acted like nothing bothered him. He picked up a few smooth river stones and knocked that dirty son of a bitch down. Well, that's kind of what we're dealing with here. Coal industry's got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of wet elephants. Sopping wet herd of elephants, I think. Wet was in there one time too many. With $100 bills. What we have is determination. And the force that is always carried by a righteous demand for justice. So because of this ongoing struggle, February the 26th means something here in West Virginia and Central Appalachia that it might not mean elsewhere. February the 26th is a day of remembrance in Appalachia. February, smack dab in the teeth of the coldest, most hateful part of winter. And unlike parts further north, where you can count on winter to get cold and stay cold, we vacillate back and forth here in Appalachia between rain and snow and ice. And on February the 26th, 1972, it was rain. Seemingly endless rain. In southern West Virginia, in Logan County. The rain fell all day, the rain fell all night. It fell in a little holler where ran a stream called Buffalo Creek. Forty-one years ago this day, a sludge dam, just a little itty-bitty baby sludge dam compared to the monstrosities that dot southern West Virginia now, holding back their billions of gallons of toxic waste. Just a little itty-bitty baby sludge dam of just some millions of gallons of toxic waste gave way The rains came and the rains came, and they overtopped the dam, which was made of dirt and rock, just like they all are. I mean, hell, if they made them, you know, concrete and stuff like that, well, that'd cost some money, and it might cut down on the quarterly earnings. So they'll just pile up some dirt and some rock and throw a few billion gallons of viscous, slimy, sleazy, filthy, toxic waste behind it and, well, hope for the best. Because after all, the people who run the coal companies, they don't live downstream from a sludge dam, a toxic waste impoundment. Hell no! Well, they live in Florida. They have yachts and beach houses and lobster for lunch and know which fork to use with the shrimp. Not like a bunch of dumbass hillbillies living in the holler, huh? But it was the hillbillies who paid the price. A wall of sludge roared down the holler from the busted dam belonging to Pittston Coal. By the time it was over, 125 people were dead. 4,000 people were homeless. You would think something like that would make a nation sit up and say, you know, we really ought not be letting people, coal companies and otherwise, be building dirt and rock dams to hold back toxic waste, even if it is in Appalachia, which we don't give a tinker's damn about. But no. Instead, the coal companies denied liability, claimed that the failure of their dirt and rock dam and the wall of toxic sludge, some several millions of gallons, that was an act of God. God did it. We didn't. That's God's rain falling. Are we responsible for the rain? Are we our hillbilly's keeper? A lot of innocents died that day. A lot of innocents were injured. A lot of innocents were rendered homeless. And so what they decided to do, the coal companies, was build them bigger. Like I said, this is just a little pissant sludge dam. Now the Brushy Fork impoundment in western Raleigh County holds back something around 9 billion plus gallons of toxic waste. You can find it on Google Maps if you look hard enough. Looks like something from another planet. Of course, then again, if you look at central Appalachia on a map, you'll find out that central Appalachia looks like it has cancer, because mountaintop removal sites look nothing so much as like skin cancers on a human body. And the sludge dams are scattered in amongst them. Most of these hills and hollers in southern West Virginia and central West Virginia have been mined out long ago. They were underground mined. One of the things that goes with underground mining is water. There's always going to be water in coal mining. So those mined out mountains are full of water. They're honeycombed. And for instance, the Brushy Fork impoundment sits on top of a mined out mountain, honeycombed, with just a few teetering pillars of supporting rock holding up the mountain. It ain't going to be there forever. Mountains have a way of blowing out. If you were to look on Google Earth at US 60, which extends from Charleston eastward towards where I live, well, you wouldn't see it because they don't update the photos that often, but there's a mine blowout. Old mine blowout. Sometimes the mines just go out the sides. and there's a part of US 60 right now that is down to one lane with those temporary stoplights. I found out about it when I drove down to get on the plane to Wisconsin last week. Afraid I was going to be late as a result. But no, the mountain just slumps, and sometimes the water comes with it. That's what happened in Martin County, Kentucky, back in 2000. The mountain just blew apart and died. And that's the kind of structure that's underneath the Brushy Fork impoundment in western Raleigh County, with the pressure of some 9 billion gallons of toxic waste sitting atop it. Imagine that pressure. Some of the smarter math and science-y people in the chat room and in the Horn family can figure out the pressure and don't have to imagine. They'll know. That was the response to the Buffalo Creek disaster by the coal industry. Let's build a bigger one. We only got 125 of them hillbillies last time. Let's see if we can wipe out a few thousand when this one goes. They're at the foot of the Brushy Fork impoundment in the direct path of what would happen when it blows. Not if it blows, when it blows. Right there at the foot of the Brushy Fork impoundment, there are things like daycare centers and state police barracks. It's been estimated that a wall of toxic waste some 40 to 60 feet high will roar down the Coal River Valley when the Brushy Fork impoundment goes. And let this settle all the way in. I know I've told you about it before, but on February the 26th of any given year, it's worth remembering. There ain't a damn thing all the way from Whitesville to St. Albans that's 60 feet tall. That means that everything that walks, crawls, hops, slithers, moves whatsoever, will be erased and swept downstream, down sludge. The bodies will pile up along the way, or maybe get hung up in tree limbs, things like that. There will be no escape. That's part of why your average coal company executive doesn't live around the hell he creates on planet Earth. There is a publication called, and it was cited by Ken Ward in his Coal Tattoo blog today. Disaster on Buffalo Creek, a citizen's report on criminal negligence in West Virginia, in a West Virginia mining community. Its conclusions read as follows. Survivors' accounts, journalists, unanswered questions, and the disappearance of the mining company official most directly involved, together with the remembrance of past disasters, brought a stunned citizenry to its feet. The public was jolted from the depths of sorrow and anguish to a sense of outrage and anger that continues to burn. For the Buffalo Creek disaster, like the recent coal mine fire tragedies at Farmington, West Virginia, and at Hyden, Kentucky, could have been prevented. It need not have happened. Clearly and simply, people living downstream from the Buffalo Mining Company's coal refuse dam at Saunders were the victims of gross negligence. Did I mention that in the past, in the fairly recent past, Alpha Natural Resources has blasted right next to their dirt and rock dam, and when they were asked about it, one of the DNR officials said, well, we found an article on the Google that said it's good for a dam to blast next to it. You know, I can find things on the Google that say the Nigerian widow wants to give me $5 million. Doesn't make it true. Need to have a little talk with the DNR about not being able to believe everything you find on the Google. In Appalachia, sometimes known as the last white colony of Western civilization. Absentee owners of the region's vast energy resources and their subservient homebred and imported politicians, time and again, are to blame for mass death and destruction. Time and again, those most at fault throw up smoke screens to obscure their responsibility. Aside from the attempted whitewashing of the more spectacular mass murders, our governors never decry the terrible fact that more than 120,000 coal miners have been killed in the coal mining industry since its beginning, that one out of every 10 coal miners is injured each year, and that an estimated one-half of the coal mining workforce becomes crippled or incapacitated by the insidious black lung disease. 3 a day die from black lung, even in 2013. In this deadly drama, the coal operator's script, placing profits before people, has been followed line by line by some of our political leaders. In the case at hand, the center stage characters are behaving true to form. Thus, with regard to the Buffalo Creek disaster, officials of the company, Pittston, called the disaster an act of God because God put all that water behind a dam that wasn't designed to hold it. Thus, Assistant Interior Department Secretary Hollis Dole, testifying before a subcommittee of Congress, doubted whether the refuse dam was hazardous and subject to regulation by the Bureau of Mines. And this. Now imagine 125 people dead, 4,000 homeless. These were the words of Republican Governor Archmore, a man so crooked that when he dies, they'll have to screw him into the dirt. Thus, Governor Archmore, taking charge of relief operations at the time, said the lethal dam had a, quote, logical and constructive purpose. A logical and constructive purpose. According to the image-conscious governor, quote, and this is a real quote, the only real sad part, you got that? Now, I know we parse some language from time to time, but I want you to understand, this is in 1972, this is the governor of the state of West Virginia, speaking in the wake of 125 dead, God knows how many injured, and 4,000 homeless. The only real sad part is that the state of West Virginia has taken a terrible beating that is worse than the disaster. It was a PR problem. Someday, and we don't suspect it, we know it. Someday, it'll happen again. And there will be another coal company executive right there standing by to blame God. And there will be some subservient, shoe-sniffing governor to worry about the image problems created for the coal companies and for the state, even as the bodies are being pulled from the trees and the toxic muck, even as the people working on the cleanup are subjected themselves to toxic waste that may very well shorten their own lives. That is the reality of West Virginia. A horror brought about by a few million gallons of toxic waste, and the response to it was not to say never again, but rather to say, let's see if we can't set another one of these up somewhere. You know, that one was kind of small, wasn't it? Because when you do mountaintop removal, you got a lot of waste, and you got to put it somewhere. all that filthy, toxic water that will never be really water again, but will rather be toxic waste. Let's build some more. We can build them bigger this time. We can put them over top of schools. You know, mercifully, after a long and heartfelt and dogged campaign, citizen activists did manage to get a new school for children who, up until that time, had to go to school with 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste looming over their heads, and the dam itself leaking. They're in that new school now. Perhaps, they're a little safer than they were. But they're still breathing blasting dust most every day. They're still filth, coal filth, in just about everything they can see, smell, taste, hear, or touch. And it falls to us. Not us as in people in Appalachia, but people of conscience, no matter where they are, to demand that there be an actual future in central Appalachia, in West Virginia, in Southwest Virginia, in Eastern Kentucky, in Eastern Tennessee, and anywhere that the blasting, the relentless ignition of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives, the same kind that Timothy McVeigh used on the Murrah Federal Building, and the same kind that 20 years ago today exploded beneath the World Trade Center. Rock houses and homes and places of worship and stores and the world itself in this area. Ron in Raleigh writes in, "Hey Bob, when these impoundments let go and the inevitable deaths take place, will the coal company execs be put in irons and perp walked to the Gray Bar Hotel and be tried for negligent homicide?" The short answer, Ron, is no. They'll blame God and continue to call themselves heroes of job creation. And they'll say things like, "Well, we done our best to make sure it was safe." I mean, you can't guard against everything. You can't guard against no act of God. I mean, when God reaches his finger down from up in heaven where he lives, where he loves all of us, because, yeah, that ever-loving God, when he decides to reach his smiting finger down and he points at something like a sludge dam and says, "Be gone with ye," well, it's gone. And there ain't nothing no engineer can do about it. And the sad thing is, there are people in these communities who will say, "Well, we always knowed it was dangerous business mining coal." And there won't be any little blood spots on the stock certificates, and there won't be any little vials of hillbilly blood or maybe the shoe of a child washed away attached to the dividend statement. And 41 years afterward, who knows? Maybe some other hillbilly with a microphone will be asking again, "When, oh Lord, when does it end?" Or maybe not. And if there is an upside to this story, the upside to this story lies in the fact that you, yes, you, wherever you are, have within your power the ability to do something about it. You really do. Now, granted, there are organizations out there that promote doing something about mountaintop removal, but the problem is they never do anything about mountaintop removal, but they make a pretty nice salary not doing anything. The AIC campaign, the AIC Act, is not one of those efforts. I don't know anybody associated with the AIC campaign that wouldn't rather be doing something else. But it's hard to do something else when there's a monster at your door, when the windows are cracked and they rattle with the blasting, when no matter how hard you clean every day, the interior of your home is coated with a new grimy patina of poisonous dust. That's the reality. You have the power to do something about it. You can go to AIC Act.org. You can learn the science related to mountaintop removal all the way down to your toenails. And you can talk about it. Wherever you are, you can talk about it. Because it is the single greatest human rights crisis transpiring in the United States at this time. You can do, for instance, what our buddy Mike called in last night to talk about doing, to take a meeting with a staffer for his member of Congress there in his district. You can do what our buddy Andy has done, going to town hall meetings and directly talking to members of Congress about this and demanding that they sign on and be part of the solution and not in their silence remain a part of the problem. You can do what Larry did, traveling at tremendous difficulty to himself because he's differently abled, to get his representative to sign on. Effort matters. Effort matters. So I thought that I thought that was worth at least commemorating. February 26th. Haven't seen any commemorations in the for-profit media today, except for that of Ken Ward of his Cold Tattoo blog. Be kind of nice to stop commemorating and start celebrating. And Lord, what a party it's going to be when we do pass the AIC Act. And when we pass it, if you've done anything, if you've written, if you've called, if you've talked to a neighbor, if you've done something, you'll say, I helped make that happen. And in that moment, if there is nothing else in all your days that make you feel like you've done something worthwhile, and I know there are, but in that moment, you will know that the time spent on this little blue-green orb of a time machine hurtling through the universe, you'll know that your time was not wasted. We'll take a little break and come back and get into the heart of Titanic Tuesday. This is Conversation Radio on the Horn. We have a $50 challenge on the table from our buddy Sal. Sure would be nice if that got met. and would get another $100 closer to finishing February in the black. I'm Bob Kincaid.
coming in these hills. Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
No, indeed. No, indeed. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's about, 17 minutes before the hour on this Titanic Tuesday. Both of those songs that you just heard, by the way, are from a brilliant disc of some several years back. A compilation called Moving Mountains, Voices of Appalachia. You know, every night at the end of the program, I say, I dedicate the program to two extremely powerful, strong women who are no longer with us. If you never got a chance, and many of you didn't, to hear Judy Bonds, let's take just a minute.
My name is Julia Bonds. I'm from Coal River, West Virginia, originally from Marfork. I moved 2 years ago because Massey Energy Coal Company moved into my hollow at Marfork. I've lived around coal mining all my life. My father, great-grandfather, his father were all coal miners, and this is an outlaw coal company. They moved in, and neighbors started moving out. We had a lot of coal truck traffic. They built a sludge dam, a coal waste dam, that holds back the water and the chemicals that they use to wash and prepare the coal in. This is an earthen dam that is as tall as the Grand Coulee Dam and holds 7 billion gallons of chemically laden coal waste. And there was a lot of black water releases in that time period. The black water looked almost like thick pea soup, but it was black. And those releases became more numerous. And I would talk to some of the workers that worked for this coal company, and they would make remarks to me such as, "Have you ever thought about moving? You know, that dam's going to end up, that pond's going to end up in your yard one day, might wipe you out." And I started thinking about that, but the thing that really got me was my grandson, when he was 6 years old. He climbed down into a stream that my family had used for seven generations, probably more, and was playing in the stream. And I looked down into the stream, and my grandson was standing in the middle of the stream, and he said, "Mama, what's wrong with these fish?" And he was standing there in his chubby little beautiful hands holding dead fish in both hands, and dead fish was floating around the stream. And of course I started screaming, get out, you know, and he was never again allowed back in that stream. A chemical that they used to treat the coal with had leaked into a stream and killed all fish, but it's not dangerous to humans, I was told. If I contaminate my children's air and my children's water, then I am the worst. That's the worst form of child abuse that there is.
Amen.
Yes, that's the worst form of child abuse. That I am sucking the earth dry of oil and coal and gas. I'm leaving nothing for my children but the waste.
Judy Bonds. Gone, but not forgotten. Not by any stretch of the imagination. She lived around coal all her life. And like so many of us, died way too early and way too young. It's part of what it is, I reckon, to be a hillbilly. Or at least, that's what the reality's been for the last 125 years. Not that there's been just a hell of a lot of interest on the part of the rest of the country to do anything about it. So, us hillbillies are trying to do something about it ourselves. Tired of hanging around, listening to other people claim that they're our Appalachian voices, running around with their thumbs up their butts, and raising a hell of a lot of money, and doing a hell of a lot of little, hell of a lot of nothing. And that's why there's an ACE Act. And that's why it depends on you. Plain and simple. ACEACT.org. Let's go ahead and take a call. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to get involved with the program. Or you can reach us on Skype. The Skype handle is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Send me a friend request. I will answer it as quickly as I know it's there, and we'll get conversating. Hey, welcome to the conversation.
This is Edward.
Well, hey, Edward, how are you?
I'm fine. I just want to let you know that I called my representative and asked her to support the ACE Act.
Good on you. Thank you.
And I've also been seeing Ted Cruz on the national news, and other people are picking up on the fact that he does sort of resemble McCarthy.
Absolutely.
And I have a news flash out of the Dallas Voice, which is one of the premier media sources for the LGBT Texas, and it concerns your dear friend, little Tim Tebow.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Anyway, it says, NFL star calls off April appearance at First Baptist Church of Dallas following week-long media firestorm over senior pastor's anti-gay views. And the pastor is named Reverend Robert Jeffries. He just oversaw $130 million expansion of the mega church. They now have over 500,000 square feet of building and over 11,000 members. How about that?
He he's practically he's practically an Ayatollah at this point, isn't he?
Just about. But the headline I thought you might enjoy. It says, Tebow cancellation, quote, a blow to Jeffries. I wouldn't touch that remark with a 10-foot pole.
No, we will leave that alone. I don't know if Cousin Edna would touch that one.
No, she wouldn't. You take care. I'm going to get off the phone so somebody else could talk to you.
All right, Edward, you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Have the same. Bye.
Yeah, Timmy Tebow did bow out on delivering a motivational speech at the First Baptist Church of Texas, run by Reverend Jeffress. Reverend, please. But that didn't sit too well with Brian Fisher. And, you know, why save this for prayer meeting when it's Titanic Tuesday? That didn't sit too well with Robert Jeffress of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Nope. He sees a giant conspiracy everywhere he goes. You know, if he gets a cold cup of coffee, there's a liberal conspiracy, and he's being persecuted for his deep and abiding Christian faith. But, yeah, more persecution. Yeah, you'll see what I mean. Here we go.
It's clear that some of the pressure that was coming against Tim Tebow was coming from homosexual activists, and it worked. They've got another scalp to hang on the wall. They've got another notch in the belt. His statement that he put out, I guess as a tweet, that he wasn't going to come, that...
Oh, Dr. Freud, that's three uses of the verb come in 23 seconds, Dr. Freud. What do you make of that?
Well, Bob, I think it is fairly clear that sometimes a cigar is not only a cigar, and sometimes, well, it would seem that Herr Fischer here could probably use a few years of therapy. His slip is showing. His Freudian slip.
Thank you, Doc. Back to your cigar.
He had received, quote, new information. We have no idea what that new information is. And that could only come from Tim Tebow because he's the only one that knows.
That's four.
Whatever this new information is. And the only thing I can think of that would be this new information would be this cacophony of homosexual activists, the bullies and bigots at Big Gay coming
Big
against
Gay.
Him with animus, vitriol, and hatred.
That's
and landing on him like a falling safe. That's new information. That's not something that he probably expected to happen. That was new to him.
God bless our buddies at rightwingwatch.org. Yeah. Five uses of the verb come in 1 minute and 11 seconds. That may be a record. Or maybe it's just irony. But, Brian, Big Gay got him. You'll have that from Big Gay. I mean, out there. Big Gay stays very, very busy. Can you imagine how busy Big Gay must be plotting earthquakes and volcanoes and airliners flying into buildings? And my goodness gracious. And then to be able to take time out to... I'm not going to use that same verb, Brian Fisher. You can't make me. Be able to take time out to SWAT Tim Tebow. Probably shouldn't have used SWAT either. Sometimes it's just hard to get around this stuff. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Kevin in Colorado Springs.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Not much. Snowy day here in the Springs.
Well, but it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah. It was snowing really heavy earlier, so I don't think...
I mean, you're not getting the Kansas blizzard, are you?
No, that blew by us a couple days ago, so that's why it's in Kansas now, and we didn't get much of it. Places in the north and east of the city did, but we didn't get anything here in the city.
Well, you know, thank God for the Republican legislators in Kansas, because they like it when their power grid goes down, and they don't want none of that sustainable.
Well, I know. I don't know what to do with a whole lot of them. It just is something that we've got to keep working against. And I know when you were talking today, I was fairly impressed with that. I've never noticed it before when I've been on the site. The link that'll allow you to send a letter to a member of your Congress.
Yeah, well, it's been there.
Yeah, I've never noticed it. Maybe because my software hasn't read it or something, but. Yeah, that could come in handy, especially since you're now in the Senate. The bills.
Well, we're trying to. We haven't been introduced in the Senate.
Right, I know, but.
But we're working them.
My senators are sort of progressive. You know, that's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
So, you know, what kind of prompted me to call in, aside from the fact I haven't in about a week and a half, is listening to Edward talk about the Tebow story and how the guy has $130 million into an expansion of the church and was 100-some-odd thousand members. And I'm thinking about
11,000 members, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, the song you play on Wednesday sometime, and it's all tax-free.
Yes.
And how much we wouldn't have a deficit problem at all if churches across this country were taxed, even at a minuscule, say, 0.5% tax. When you got guys like these Jeffers doing a $130 million expansion, you know, multiply that point times 0.05 or 0.005 and see what you come up with. And it's still a lot of money that would go into the government. But they want to, apparently they're going to try to take this down and see if Obama will blink first or whether they'll blink first or what.
Well, you know? Sandra sent me an article earlier today via the Twitter from the American Prospect talking about the fact that President Obama seems to have been outmaneuvered on this. Because the for-profit media and the Republicans are talking about this being something. I mean, they're succeeding. As noted on the program last night, Kevin, everybody seems to forget that when the sequester was passed, that John Boehner stood up in front of God and everybody and said, well, we've got 98% of what we want.
Yep.
And that's just gone. And now it's Barack Obama's problem. But the fact of the matter is, there was some caving going on there. And yep. Lord knows, he kind of has to own the Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Yep. I agreed with that article in the Prospect to a certain degree. I think this could blow up in the Republican faces big time, though, if they actually push it to actually doing the sequester. Because, you know, some of these cuts, well, like me, you know, just any kind of cut, any kind of benefit or, entitlement that I earned, just makes it that much tougher to live. And for some people, it's the difference between having a place to live and not, things like that. And, of course, we know that we really don't have a deficit problem, that the way you get out of deficit problems is to spend, not to have austerity. So I'm a little bit nervous about it, but the good part is I think it could really blow up in the Republican faces. Obama may have been outmaneuvered a bit, but, as long as he doesn't cave big time.
Well, Friday, you know, March 1st.
Yep.
I noticed he was out at Newport News Shipyards
yep.
earlier today delivering a speech on what it would mean there.
I guess Virginia is going to be the first place hit by the cuts because of all the shipbuilding and...
Every state will get hit at the same time, but some states... Well, the Newport News Shipyard is not a Cracker Jack box operation. There's a lot of money there.
Yeah, and all the Navy bases and that around there. Same thing with here in Colorado Springs. We've got three within driving distance. So, cuts to the Defense Department like that all at once will cause some problems. I could live with the Defense Department being cut by 50%.
Well, and to be fair, I'm much more concerned about the cuts to senior nutritional programs.
Yep.
And the cuts to Head Start. Because that truly is a matter of cutting off one's nose to spite one's face.
Yes, it is. And,
I just got a tweet from Sanders. He says, the cuts are just going to hurt the lesser people.
Yeah. It's going to hurt anybody that is at the poverty level. That's what it's going to hurt first. And
well, look at the people it's going to hurt who are on unemployment.
Oh, God. And that's, we were having a conversation about this in the chat room. And I am of the opinion that if this sequestration actually happens, people are going to be in the streets, and because of that's one of the reasons why you start cutting people's unemployment by a third. People just are at the point that they're not going to take it anymore, and I'm hoping all the protest and anger remains nonviolent. But with what was it, 3 million guns sold after Newtown, I'm a little bit nervous about that. More than anything else.
Well, but remember, I don't have the statistic to back this up, so I admit I'm speculating, Kevin. But do please remember that those 3 million guns sold after Newtown were bought by people who already had guns. So it's not like there's 3 million more people with guns. Those are paranoids who ran out to get them a shooting gun because they were... Well, the NRA is the marketing arm of the arms of the citizen arms industry. So Obama's going to get your guns. So naturally, while they can apparently operate a trigger finger, they don't operate their brains very well.
Yes, but in all that 3 million, it may have been a lot of people that own guns, but there's got to be some people in there that took advantage of the special offers by the NRA for 10% off if you go out and buy a semi-automatic gun, like an AR-15.
Yeah, our buddy, the Angry Indian, pointing out, he says, that's correct, Bob, they were repeat customers.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. Titanic really fits the bill when you talk about what is going on with the conservative wing of this country. And I just have no patience I can't think of the word, but I just have a lot of disdain for the Republican Party and for Fox News. You saw that where, what's his name, apologized earlier today. Did you catch that?
No. Who apologized?
I can't think of his name now.
The guy that hosted the Oscars? Seth MacFarlane?
No. No, it was a newscaster, and I'm blanking on even what he had. I'm sure someone will email or tweet or tell you in the chat room. I just can't think of it now. I just had a total blank of it. But it was a newscaster for Fox that apologized about, I can't remember. I've got it on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't draw it up. But anyway, I posted an article on there. Oh, it was about Wiccans. That's what it was.
Oh.
he had said that Wiccans, any group that celebrates Halloween as one of their holidays, he has no time for, something like that. And he said a few other things about them in not so glowing terms. And apparently the blowback on that was pretty extensive for a Fox anchor to actually apologize about that. And, you know, I think what I'm most upset about is Fox in the 20-some-odd years they've been on TV here in America, they have just been the propaganda channel, not news, propaganda. And I really get upset when I think about the people who are voting and working against their own self-interest by supporting this agenda that this propaganda machine has spit out. And, you know, I just have no love at all for Fox at all. I mean, nothing.
I would be deeply worried about you if you did.
Well, you know, the only time I've watched Fox in probably the last 2 years was election night when Karl Rove melted down, and that was good entertainment. But past that, no, I don't watch Fox. And even, not the news channel, but the regular Fox channel, I don't watch it either. The only time I watch that is Sunday afternoon football. And that's it. And I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to verbalize what I'm feeling, because I know this sequestration eventually will hit all of us if these Republicans get their way. And what they're really shooting for is Medicare, Social Security cuts. And you're going to have some very angry people if you start doing that. And I don't know why they can't understand. And I know they do to an extent, but I really don't think they've got a grip on what that will do if they start cutting people's Social Security and Medicaid or Medicare, because those are earned benefits, not entitlements.
They're not earned. They're owned.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where I'm at. I know that's not going to happen right now, tomorrow, next week. But down the road, if these Republicans get their way, it's going to affect me and most of the people I know. And, you know, what do you do? Because I hate to say the word too disabled or use it in that context, but I can't work. You know, there's other things besides my eyesight that are wrong.
No, but Kevin, stop. I can't stand to hear you sort of, well, not sort of, it's like, I mean, there's self-deprecation, and that's good in some instances, but there is no need for you to feel bad about the hand that you have played throughout your life. Just stop that, okay, because you have worked.
Exactly.
You have put in your time. You have pressed your shoulder against the grinding wheel of the so-called free market and capitalism. Why in God's name should you at this point say, you know, sound like you feel bad for what you can no longer do? By God, you and every other disabled worker in this country deserves some sort of a freaking medal, as far as I'm concerned, having broken your bodies.
Yep.
On the rack of this country's economy, and in large part, Kevin, thanklessly. I mean, there's not a member of the Republican Party that does not begrudge you every damn dime of your disability.
Yep.
On the other hand, were you to ask them to live on what you manage to live on what your smarts and your determination allow you to live on, they would go running crying to mama or their banker or their PAC inside of a week, if not a day.
Yep. you know, and no, I don't, Bob, I don't feel bad about not working. It's just that if these people cut $20 out of my Social Security, it's that thing that bothers me. And it's the people that I know, some of the people in my life, that have bought into this propaganda in this Christian move everybody to the right and go directly against the teachings of the Palestinian day laborer, as you like to say, that go directly against those teachings and have conned people into this. And it just makes me angry. And it also scares me, because that's what happened in Germany some 70 years ago. And I don't want to see our nation do that. And, you know, the sequesters, this is a manufactured crisis. But people have let it happen. Whether it's the president, whether it's the Congress, they've let it happen. And
Now, hold on just a minute. There are a number of ignorant members of the electorate in this country.
Oh.
But let's remember the outcome of the last general election, November 2012.
Yep.
Let's remember that taken as a whole, that Democrats running for the House of Representatives received vastly more votes than did members running for the House of Representatives who were Republicans.
Yes, they did.
Now, that's not because the people failed. That is because the Republican Party cares more about its politics, cares more about its party than it does about the American body politic or the wellness of the nation in general.
Yep.
You cannot get those results without rigging the manner by which people cast votes.
Yep.
And it presages a possibility of the House of Representatives remaining in Republican hands for God knows how long. Because you can't gerrymander a Senate race. You have to engage in a different kind of voter suppression for that.
Yep.
You can't necessarily gerrymander a presidential election, although that attempt is being made with the electoral college vote splitting proposals that have been out there on the table. But you damn sure can gerrymander the House of Representatives into something approaching a near permanent Republican majority.
Yep.
Now the nice thing about that is there are still enough people who do not vote that it's possible to get out there and change that.
Yep.
I mean, look, Texas has, Texas has a few Democratic members of the House of Representatives.
Yep.
But almost every metropolitan area in Texas is blue. Is.
Yep. Yeah.
But the state has such a screwed up gerrymandering laid on it, if you think back to the early days of the Bush administration, Tom DeLay, people like that, that it's almost impossible for the people's will to be done. Because essentially in these gerrymandered districts, what you have is the concept that of one man, one vote, one person, one vote, I should say, has been done away with.
Yeah, they've gerrymandered it for, say, the rural areas that are blue, kind of a thin line that stretches all the way across the county, and then the red part of the county is all over the county, you know, and they've segregated all the votes for the blue into that one thin line. But I guess what I'm saying is, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but of course the Democrats are more progressive, there haven't been many Democrats that have stood up and spoke out against that. Not like I'd like them to. not like I'd like the president to. And I guess that's what I'm saying is, you know, if we had a Roosevelt type of president as far as standing up and speaking out against these wrongs, and more than just a couple members of Congress in the Senate and the House both, who are willing to stand up every so often and speak out about things like this, I don't think it could happen. But because of apathy, and not voter apathy, because we did get out the vote, but the apathy about the gerrymandering is what bothers me. And, you know, I know judges set those. It eventually has to go to a judge to do this now because both sides fight and don't want to compromise. And, of course, with Bush being able to win to judges for 8 years, we've got a lot of the right-wing trolls in there, and that's why we're able to have these gerrymandered districts. But, you know...
Okay. But, Kevin, that's not the end of it. Consider this. Let's see. This comes out of Montana. A bill has been proposed in the Montana legislature by Montana State Representative Steve Lavin. He is, of course, a you-know-what.
Yep.
Here's the text of the bill. Provision for vote by corporate property owner. See, we're back to that. We're talking about property ownership now. We have literally time-traveled back to before the middle of the 19th century.
Yep.
Provision for vote by corporate property owner. One, subject to subsection 2, if a firm, partnership, company, or corporation owns real property within the municipality, the president, vice president, secretary, or other designee of the entity is eligible to vote in a municipal election. The individual who is designated to vote by the entity is subject to the provisions of Section 1 and shall also provide the election administrator documentation of the entity's registration with the Secretary of State. Montana is actually preparing to give corporations a vote. So it's no longer that they're voting with their money or they're voting with their influence. There is a part of the Republican mindset that says they need a straight up vote. You know, Randy just wrote in from PA a minute ago and he said, if money is freedom and you've got no money, then you've got no
freedom.
Yeah.
And that, you know, as you were telling that, I was thinking also, it gives the corporations an unlimited power, because not only do the corporations have a vote, they usually come into a city or state and ask for tax breaks to be place of business there. So they get the tax breaks, they get the vote, they get the property, and of course with some places doing the eminent domain, people have their property taken from them for some of these big businesses to come in, and then you give them the vote on top of it. You know, it. And so that president, vice president, whoever that designee is, does he get two votes in his general election?
Yes.
One is the corporate.
One as the corporate president and one as a citizen.
Yeah.
Or as a you know, human citizen.
Yeah.
That's just in the state house. But generally these, you know, because of the existence of things like ALEC, Kevin.
Yep.
These things do not happen in a vacuum. They don't just happen in one place. Look for this to crop up, you know, start popping up like dandelions after spring rain in other red right-wing the Koch brothers et al.-controlled states.
Yep.
And people might say, well, you know, it's just one corporate, it's just one vote. But the fact of the matter is, the idea of having to prove property ownership.
Yep.
You know, during the PRISM chat this past Sunday, Professor Keith Lilly was talking about an exercise that he does in his history classroom. He says, it's 1850. Who can vote in this room? He says, I want everybody to put all, I want everybody to put your hands in the air. Because you can all vote right now. Now it's 1850. Who can vote? People of color, hands down, please. Hands go down. Women, hands go down. So mostly you've got a bunch of 21-year-old white males at that point with their hands in the air. And he said, no, we're not done.
Yep.
How many of you own 50 acres of property?
Yep.
And suddenly, nobody can vote.
Yep.
I mean, that's how profound it is. And when you start talking about property ownership requirements, well, you know, if a corporation has to show property ownership, well, then why shouldn't anybody else? This is retrograde Confederacy the stuff.
Oh, yep. I'm with
the
you.
Civil War is on. Only yep. Thus far, it is a cold Civil War.
Yep. And it's not going to just be North and South this time either.
Oh, no. Let's see. Corporations would not be allowed to vote in school elections, and it only applies to municipal elections. Fortunately, the report I'm looking at says that it was tabled shortly after it came before a legislative committee, so it probably won't become law. But none of these cockamamie schemes ever do the first time through, Kevin.
No. That's the thing, is it's the first step. They're not going to give up on that idea. And
by the way, this guy was really, no kidding, this Lavin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a member of ALEC.
Oh, of course. Of course. So
yeah. maybe we're better off if we begin to understand this as a cold civil war.
I think so. People are going to have to make choices, and you're going to have to decide which side you're going to be on. And you know, that's why I say I get so angry at the amount of deception that's been preached by the churches, by Fox.
Well, hey, you know what? If you're a church, wouldn't you get behind that law? Even, I mean, it's been tabled now, but next time it comes around, wouldn't you get behind that? Because maybe the priest would get two votes.
Exactly. And if you're a church, and you're, say, that 150, how many acres did they say that was that he had?
Well, at one time in Virginia, it was 50 acres.
No, I mean, how big was that church in Texas that Edwards...
Oh, God, 500,000 square feet, 11,000 members.
Okay. So when churches get to that size, eventually a split takes place.
Oh, no, not in these. Seldom in these.
Right, but I have seen it happen. And so if your church split into four different churches, would that be four different pastors getting four different votes? You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
Where literally they could control, they get not only the tax breaks, but then they get that vote.
Well, but look what happens. Let's say you spin off another corporation.
Exactly.
You've got 100 acres. And you spin off a second corporation, and each corporation now has 50 acres, and there you go.
Yep.
So it got stymied this time through, but don't think for an instant that it won't be back, because if it was cooked up in the fetid little brains of ALEC, it's coming back.
Oh, I imagine it'll show up in the cell. You know,
and yet here we sit waiting this term of the Supreme Court for the other shoe to drop, because you know as sure as God made little green apples, Kevin, that the Roberts Court is going to strike down the Voting Rights Act.
I certainly hope not, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that bet.
I just look back on when I was younger, and I never would have thought we would have been in this place in 2012. I never would have thought we would have been where we're at right now.
I was just becoming a voter when Ronald Reagan became president.
Right. Yeah.
And in fact, he was inaugurated just shortly before my 18th birthday. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm some kind of prophet, but I kind of knew, or you could see. And maybe it's because I had Depression-era parents who were sitting there pointing shining the flashlight down the path where we were headed. You know, my father used to sit and say, you need to understand. The Republican Party wants a two-class society, the very rich, of whom there will be very few, and the very poor, of whom there will be very many.
Right.
And even back then, my parents were looking at me saying, I'm worried about the America that you're going to be an adult in. Guess what?
Yep.
They were right to be worried.
Yep.
And now most of that generation is gone, and we have lost their transmission of generational wisdom.
Yep.
And you can tell the difference. See, this conversation, the talk about entitlement reform, could never have taken place in the generation in which Social Security was born.
No.
Never. That's why Eisenhower said what he did back in the 1950s about any political party that talks about cutting Social Security would cease to be a national political party.
Yep.
Because the generation, the generation of old folks,
yep,
that it pulled out of poverty, the rates of poverty among our elderly population was stunning, heart-rending. I remember talking about it years ago on the program. I forget some article. Sandra and I were talking about it, but I remember the conversation. Our elderly lived in crushing poverty, and the generation that was lifted out of it would have absolutely cashiered any politician.
Yep.
That talked about messing with Social Security. That's why it became referred to as the third rail of American politics. Well, the juice is out of the third rail, apparently, now, Kevin.
But, see, that's the thing that I get upset at, is that generation, those people of that generation that are still alive, a lot of them are voting Republican. And I just can't believe that. I can't believe that they could even consider.
No, the generation that got lifted out of poverty is dead.
Yeah, the original, sure.
I mean, my grandmother, when Social Security was passed, was 40 years old.
Yep.
Okay, she had a meaningful, and I do mean meaningful, old age as a result of Social Security. She's
sure.
Dead. She would have been 100 years old in 1994.
Yep.
And they waited. They waited. The Republican Party waited until those people were dead.
Yeah. But that
and then, yeah, the next generation that came along, my parents' generation,
yep.
Well, that's what Fox was created for. And it runs in nursing homes, and it runs in bingo halls, and it runs in doctor's offices. And I remember the story my father told me one time, Kevin, about having to leave a Jiffy Lube.
Yep.
Because they wouldn't turn off the damn Fox, and he would not be around it on. And they wouldn't turn it, you know, he looked at him and he said, yeah, put it, the Three Stooges, cartoons, shopping channels, something.
Yeah.
But get that filth off of here if you want my money. And they said, no. And they said, all right, you don't get my money.
Yep. I have to deal with that occasionally on the paratransit buses that I take. You'll have a driver that's his bread and butter is disabled people. Who's paying for those rides in some way, shape, or form? They're not paying all of it, but you know, they do pay for those rides, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. His bread and butter is that. And he's got Fox on there, and I have to ask him to turn it down. We've had to actually go to the city and ask them to pass some sort of rule telling the drivers that they can't keep that stuff on. They can't keep anything on there other than if the passenger asks for it. Yeah, but I've had drivers that are like, no, I don't want to turn it. I'll turn it down, but I'm not going to turn it off. I don't want to hear Rush Limbaugh. I don't want to hear Fox. And I'm paying for the ride, you know. And that driver is dependent upon that. That Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid all goes away. We ain't riding. It's already, it cost me $7 round trip. Round trip. That's whether I go a mile or 10 miles. $7 every time I take a trip. You can't do that too many days out of a month, Bob.
No.
Not at $7. And the mayor here...
And see, that begs the question, Kevin. Why is it $7? Why isn't that something that this country feels strongly enough about?
Yep.
That it can do for its differently abled population?
Yep, exactly.
Well, they got to carry their weight. Well, by God, like we talked about, you already have.
Yep.
Well, we don't want to create a culture of dependency.
I just love that one when they talk about it with the unemployed, the long-term unemployed. Yeah, we're going to cut your unemployment because you've been long-term.
Well, that'll inspire them to go out and take any old job they can get, and they'll help the economy get better.
Yeah, that'll inspire them to go rob a bank. You know.
Well, get some health care in the prison. Well, maybe.
You had a guy do that a while back.
No, I know. I remember. That's why I said it. Hey, Kevin, it's been great talking to you. You have yourself a great evening, all right?
Hey, thank you, Bob, and you have a great evening yourself.
I'm going to try.
Thank you very much.
Take care now. Bye. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Hey, welcome to the program.
Mr. McCade.
Yes.
Mr. Kincaid, this is Sir Thomas Moore.
Oh, yeah?
I heard you had a problem with my hat.
Yeah, that and your hair shirt.
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we have a member of your Supreme Court that is making a mockery. Just a mockery of my hat and my shirt.
Oh, you mean you mean Scalia's Tom Ass hat shirt? Or Tom Ass hat?
Mr. Scalia is a half hat. Ass hat?
Yes.
Hat ass.
Yeah, I no. Either way, I understand it's tough over the centuries.
And he has no right to be wearing that hat, Mr. McCade. Mr. Kincaid. We will put a stop to this, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, I wish you would.
Fat Tony does not deserve to wear that hat. Maybe what should happen to Fat Tony is what happened to me. That might be a good punishment for Mr. Scalia. Bob, this is Andy.
Yeah, I know. How you doing, Andy?
Friggin', that's too much with that hat. Did you... You know, talking about that Thomas More thing, I sent you an email a while back. You know, they went through to find the DNA that King Richard, of course.
Yes.
And you did mention it on your show. But the guy they tracked down, I guess, was the sister, a relative, you know, an ancestor of the sister of King Richard. And he lives in Toronto, actually, and he makes furniture. And that was the DNA.
Because I read that email and I didn't realize he was Canadian. I thought he was still in England.
Yeah, according to the BBC, he's Canadian. They interviewed the dude and he said he didn't want the job as king. You know, he said the Stuarts could have it. That was fine with him. But the guy was pretty cool. He was very articulate for being a furniture maker.
No, I don't doubt it. You know, blood will tell, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah, they said he was a big, you know, hefty type guy anyway.
And he was surprised. And he was surprised when he found out. The first thing I thought of when I saw that was that John Goodman movie of many years ago called King Ralph.
Mm-hmm. King Ralph, huh?
Yeah.
I must have missed that one.
Yeah, he's an American guy, just a regular Joe who finds out that he's next in line for the British crown, and you know, hilarity ensues. John Goodman's a pretty doggone good actor.
He's pretty funny. No question about it. He gets after it.
Well, him as the Cyclops in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And there we are doing what Juanita was talking about last night, making, you know, referring to movies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I thought all the Plantagenets were gone. But of course, there was some Plantagenet connection in the Yorks and the Lancasters.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that were straight up Plantagenets, that male line died out with Richard III. So I guess he would be what this guy in Canada would be. What's the right word? Distaff?
I don't know. I wouldn't know what you'd call that. He somehow, like I said, related to King Richard's sister.
Right.
Down that line. Anyway, I tried to push your AGAC at a town hall that my congresswoman had. She did actually, you know, she did one of these deals where she was reading off the cards that people submitted. And I did mention the...
Yeah, was this the Jackie Spear?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you didn't catch the podcast, but I did, in fact. I told folks about that. Mentioned it tonight, as a matter of fact, as well, as an example of the activism folks can engage in to get this thing passed. You know, one of the things that we learned was that her assistant said that, you know, they needed to see that, you know, real constituents really cared about this. So it seems like, you know, you provided that.
Yeah, it was funny. During the town hall, I had on one of those Cool River Mountain shirts.
Oh, you had your Save the Endangered Hillbilly shirt?
Yeah. And when the her staffer asked the question to her, some old guy next to me goes, "You did that, didn't you?" You submitted that because he saw my shirt. It's kind of funny.
Awesome.
But then I ran right up to the microphone as soon as we got a chance for open forum, and I reiterated the same thing. And they were trying to take the mic away from me. Bob, you believe that?
Sadly, yes, Andy, I do believe that.
Well, I kept asking her, "Are you going to co-sign the bill or not?" You know, that's the big enchilada here. And, you know, crickets. And then I asked her again, "Are you?" The guy's grabbing the microphone. "Are you going to co-sign the bill, Ms. Spear?" No, that's where the rubber meets the road, my dear.
Yeah.
You can say anything you want, as much as you supposedly are behind this and supports the people of Apple, which you did say, and the kids and stuff. But goddamn, lady. Put your John Hancock where your mouth is, will you? No. Wouldn't commit.
Well, that just means the pressure has to be ratcheted up another notch.
Yeah, I saw on I was going through my emails clearing out things. I saw I got from Phil Billy Elitist or something like that.
Yeah, that's me.
You. That's another you, huh?
Yeah.
And, you know, that might be a good idea. You mentioned taking a group picture with a sign made up. And I could...
Yeah, maybe in your next PDA meeting. The other cool thing, I mean, I don't know if you can do it, but if you've got a laptop, Andy, and wireless access wherever it is y'all get together, just fire up ACAC.org and go over to the place where you can contact your rep and have everybody step up to the laptop and send a letter to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an extremely handy little thing, and it won't take 5 minutes for each person. It won't take 2 minutes for each person to do it. You plug in a zip code, and then boom, there you are.
And that's at the ACAC.org?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to. That's actually my DFA.
I'm sorry. Yeah, not PDA. DFA.
I belong to both, so.
Oh, okay.
You could be talking both.
Yeah, you're a joiner.
I am. My DFA group is down, is actually in Spears district, and my PDA group is actually in Nancy Pelosi's district.
Well, it wouldn't break my heart if Nancy got on board. Of course, the minority leader and the speaker seldom actually champion bills, but, yeah.
Oh, well, that's the excuse they use anyway.
Right. Neither do committee chairmen. We've learned that, too.
Right. I've heard the same baloney, and that's what it is, baloney. If they were really behind it, you know, really believed in it, they'd put their, like they say, their John Hancock where their supposed beliefs are. But anyway, yeah, I got the people up there, too, who tried. Since you introduced the bill, I haven't talked to either group about the new bill coming out, so I'm going to have to do that. So hopefully I can get some airtime next meetings and just mention the new number. And that's a good idea, too, about the going to the website and sending an email.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can start doing that whenever we've got a chance to table on the thing at an event or something like that. What I've got to find out is if being at the website, if the widget will let you do multiple emails.
Right. Anyway, to get off the subject, you guys, I don't know if it was Kevin or I think Kevin was your.
Yeah, Kevin was previous to you.
Talking to the guy from Texas prior.
Oh, Edward, yes.
One of the two, you're talking about Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that was Edward.
Who looks like McCarthy.
Yeah.
Joseph McCarthy.
Frighteningly so.
God, is that guy a maniac? What a SOB he is, man. I mean, he is the consummate, neoliberal reactionary in the Senate. He is the man.
Yeah, because even in the Chuck Hagel thing today, I don't know if you noticed it, but did you see that Rand Paul actually voted to confirm
Hagel?
Yeah.
Really? No, that was good of a.
That was Rand not wanting to look too teabaggy, because he's all. Remember during the interrogation.
Well, this Chuck Hagel thing just kills me too. It's one of their guys.
Yeah,
right?
It's not like
they can't even accept one of their own.
Right, and Ron and Raleigh wrote earlier this evening, and he said, he remarked on something similar. He said, while I'm no fan of Mr. Hagel, the thing that troubles me is that it seems that a Democratic president is proscribed from appointing a Democrat to this position, which to my mind is the most powerful. Just a minute, my screen got blocked. Most powerful of the cabinet positions. The Republicans that are voting against one of their own have stated that the reason he's insufficiently supportive of Israel and not strong enough in his condemnation of Iran is, oddly enough, the only reason, if it were true, that I'd favor Chuck. I think we need to put some distance between us and the worst ally a country could have. The reason we're sanctioning Iran isn't because of their desire to gain a nuke, it's because we're still pissed off at them for the hostage taking in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Ron has a good point in that, why can't a Democrat nominate a daggum Democrat?
Wesley Clark. That's who I would think would be a great candidate.
Yeah, but supposedly he has baggage.
Yeah, he doesn't believe 9-1-1 occurred the way the government says. Almost like 60% of the country, only like 60% of the country.
Right.
The baggage. Ted Cruz, he actually said that Chuck Hagel had accepted an honorarium from North Korea. And he's got a complete, right-wing voting track record so far on this. He voted against the Violence for Women, as you, I think, have shown. Grassley is another guy who, all the Republicans were against the violence because they just can't have the Indians actually having a fair.
Well, we can't have white folks being tried for Indians. Next thing you know, they'll be held responsible for all the rotten crap we've done to them for 300, 400, 500 years.
And he's against the debt ceiling, moving that. He's for cutting the military part of the sequester out of that budget deal, so the military doesn't have to take the cuts. I guess they had a vote for that. He was against the aid for Sandy. He voted against John Kerry. You know, you need.
Yeah, but you know what? Next summer, when Texas catches fire again,
yeah,
he'll be first in line, as the Bible says, hollering, "Lord, Lord."
And he's, you know, got a perfect voting record from the Club for Growth. That's got to tell you something. He's their best man.
Well, that makes me feel ever so much better. Not.
And you know, the guy was actually born in Canada.
Yes, he was.
Freaking Canadian, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and if that plays well, you can count on Marco Rubio to suddenly remember that he was born in Canada, then taken to Cuba, then brought to America.
No telling what Marco Rubio will say. Guy's got so many stories. No truth in advertising there.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I felt bad for him during the response to the State of the Union. Cottonmouth is hell. Cottonmouth can be debilitating.
Yeah. Well, he showed that.
You know, I'd say next time he gives a major speech, he might want to hold off on the pipe until after it's over.
Right. Hey, on another thing, you brought up the other night, I think it was with Albert, the sage from southwest Wisconsin, brought up the Vernon U. Bowman versus Monsanto case.
Yes.
You know, I really feel like that guy's a hero. I mean, that guy's another Percy Smyser as far as I'm concerned. You take seeds from a grain elevator, how do you know what's in those seeds? I mean, you're buying from an independent seller. You don't know if Monsanto's got its Roundup-ready garbage mixed in there with everybody else's seeds. And if you want to plant those seeds, and like he says in his case, that's what they've done for hundreds of years, farmers.
Well, it's the essence of agriculture. But it goes even deeper than that, Andy, because let's say you bought all of your seeds from Monsanto. Because, in fact, you can wind up with their genetic material in your output without ever having been to the grain elevator, because plants pollinate and pollen blows. There's right. hardly a grain, for instance, there's hardly a grain of corn in the entire world, I think, that does not have some amount of Monsanto genetically engineered filth in it.
Right.
So only in the twisted reasoning of a right-wing court can you come up with the idea that a plant can become property. And that's what this all turns on. It turns on a decision that says that you can patent a genetically modified organism and say that nobody else can have it if they don't pay you for it, and patent law applies to it.
Right. It just kind of boggles my mind to think you can patent a plant. That you can patent a piece of nature. It just does. I don't care how you bend it and how you say it, it's just not right. And even patenting a plant generations down the line of that plant, it's still on the same patent. It just doesn't click.
Right. So, I mean, that's the question. If it stops being exactly that organism, if, say, somebody else's genetic material gets into it, is it still the patented item?
Absolutely. It can mutate again, which is what living organisms do. They always mutate. So it mutates down the road, and Monsanto still has the full patent on it. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, this is Mother Nature you're dealing with, man. Putting the corporate logo on Mother Nature, man. Bad. And here's a guy, you know, he spent $31,000 of his own money in legal fees. Now he's got a pro bono lawyer. He's been fined $84,000 already, the case he lost to Monsanto. So, man, I give the guy a lot of effing credit. 75-year-old dude, he don't have to be doing this. But he's doing it. And good for him. God, I think he's a hero.
I do, too.
Percy Smyser type. Man.
But of course, I think we all acknowledge that he's fighting uphill with one foot in the bucket.
Oh, mercy.
I mean, and remember, who is, I saw it over at Bart Cop today, as a matter of fact. Who is Obama's secretary of, oh, God, I forget what he's secretary of. I'm trying to pull it up right now. But he is, he's, of course, a former executive vice president of Monsanto.
Oh, that's Michael Taylor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Michael. Yeah.
I can remember signing a petition maybe a year ago for Obama to get rid of him. I think it was a MoveOn.org petition that was put up to get rid of Michael Taylor, you know, corporate lawyer for Monsanto, in and out of the door at the FDA. Yeah, that's criminal. And Obama does it, man. You know, I just heard, too, at OMG, the Office of Management, OMB, I guess, Office of Management and Budget, he just put this woman, I think her name is Burr, Sylvia Burr or something like that, if I have it. I'm probably wrong. I'm probably butchering the name. But she was head of the Walmart Foundation, which goes around throwing money all over the place, getting people to make sure they don't put card check in that the Democratic Party doesn't use card check. You know, she's got this charity, and she's giving out money all over, and she's getting people like the NAACP, who was a big benefactor of the Walmart Foundation, to make sure they, you know, don't support labor, and instead support Walmart. And he's going to put her in charge of the OMB. Yeah. What is this dude doing, man? I mean, he is just screwing us left and right.
Yeah, but one of these days he'll have another meeting of bloggers at the White House, and he'll whip out the styrofoam cups and serve up some beans and some Kool-Aid, and we'll all feel like we matter again.
And the thing with the sequester, you know, although John Boehner has plainly said he got 98% of what he wanted when they did that, when they finally came up with the deal, Obama and Jack Lew did the deal. You know, they didn't have to do the deal, and they did do that deal. I mean, unfortunately, he put that deal together, and now, of course, the Republicans are lying through their teeth, and John Boehner is lying through his teeth because he got what he wanted out of the damn thing. But, you know, now it's all Obama's idea. And that's what you get for doing a deal with these SOBs, man. You can't deal with people that have no integrity. You can't do that, Mr. He never learns, man. Just tell the people these people aren't, you know, the Republican Party that used to be. This is something else, man. This is something so far right to the right of Attila the Hun and right of, gosh, Genghis Khan, man. These guys are something else. Hey, another thing, I want to mention another senator, too, that just really burns me. Senator Burr from North Carolina.
Oh, Jesus, please. Yeah.
Did you see him in the hearings with, I think it was John Brennan, and waterboarding came up, and he did another thing, you know, like Rubio, he started drinking water, and he goes, oh, I don't want to drink too much.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't. This is waterboarding.
Waterboarding. Yeah, did you hear the audio? Did you hear the audience laugh?
You son of a bitch. God, if I had been near him, I would have belted him one so quick. You ruined this country, you son of a bitch, USO, making fun of stuff like that. God, these people are sick, Bob. We are really dealing with sick MFers in that party. And this guy, too, kills me because my fraternity that I'm in put him on the front cover one time of the fraternity newsletter that they put out promoting him as the big candidate, you know, representing the fraternity from North Carolina. Son of a bitch. After they did that, I haven't given a dime and won't do anything with that fraternity, you know.
Yeah.
That's it, baby. You want to put a guy, promote a jackass like that, and he is a jackass. I mean, what a jackass effing move. And like you said, my father fought in World War II, too, and his brothers and my great-uncle, you know, lost his lungs fighting in Asia for this crap from these SOBs. God damn.
Kind of hard to stomach.
It's sick to me.
But, well, while
ought to be taken out somewhere.
While we are on the topic of lunatic right-wing senators, I don't think the list would be complete, Andy, if we didn't bring up Senator Jug Handle Ears, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood.
Oh, you got a winner there, baby. There's another winner.
He's
Beauregard.
Yeah, Beauregard.
I love that. Beauregard.
God. Who does that now? but yeah, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III is still all butthurt about Obamacare. And it was today when there was a budget committee hearing in the Senate. And, yeah, this guy's just a liar. Now, remember, the history of this guy is that...
Heritage Foundation program, too. That's what kills me.
Yeah.
This is a Republican program.
Yeah.
The Affordable Health Care Act. It's a Republican plan.
Bingo. Consider, this is the same guy who once said, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana.
Yeah, you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, this is the vengeance. He's butthurt. Because at one point in time, he could have just gone quietly into the night as a lifelong tenured member of the federal, he was appointed to the federal district bench, and the whole Senate said, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
So then Alabama responded by sending him to the Senate to work his iniquity. Well, now he's,
failing upward.
The Peter principle in all of its screaming glory.
Right.
And he claims that the Affordable Care Act will it'll raise the long-term debt by $6.2 trillion. Now, bear in mind, the whole purpose behind the Affordable Care Act was, at least theoretically, to reduce, you know, it was to take a bite out of rising medical spending and debt. Well, it turns out the guy is such a miserable little liar that the only way he could come up with those numbers is if he commissioned a report in which he took out all of the cost containment provisions from Obamacare and then projected it forward. In which case, yeah, sure, that's how it comes out. But, I mean, Jesus, really? You got to fudge the numbers? It's pathetic. But that's but don't worry, the voters down in Alabama stand won't hear what I just told you. They won't know that he fudged them. Obamacare's going to sink us in debt. Or my name's not Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood.
You know, we still do have a problem with the Affordable Health Care Act, though. I don't know if you saw an article that came out on January 6th in the New York Times. Health insurers raise rates by double digits.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was actually in California, a lot of the article. A guy named Dave Jones, which I actually had helped get elected when I used to live in Sacramento. He's actually a pretty good dude. And it shows, in the article they mentioned Aetna raising rates by 32%, Anthem Blue Cross by 26%, Blue Shield by, I think, an over 20%. Also, and they had Dave Jones in the article, who's the commissioner down there, the insurance commissioner, who they tried to pass a bill that would actually give him the right. He has all the data of the financial statements of the insurance companies to know how much they're how profitable they are. And so he could actually change the rate hikes to something more reasonable if he deems it to be so. But they couldn't pass that bill, although it's going to be on the ballot as a referendum coming up next November, I think. So that'll be good. But they couldn't pass that, so he would have the right to actually control the prices. And in that article, that they actually said that New York State does have that ability. Their insurance commissioner can actually ratchet back. Now, you can do it with car insurance, and he can do it with that. He can actually say the rates are too high and the rate hike's too high, but he can't do it with health insurance. But in New York State, they can. And in New York State, they were trying to up the rates, I think, by 9.5%, which would be actually good for California. But, and they got up to, they cut it in half to like 4.5%, the insurance commissioner was able to do. But these rate hikes in insurance, health insurance, is just insane, man. It makes absolutely no sense. You know, with the way the inflation is so low, it's below 2%.
And some of this is because all of those provisions of the Affordable Care Act have not yet kicked in.
You know, remember, the big day is actually January 1st of 2014.
Well, I've even heard in October, November of this year, you'll be able to start actually...
Right, October of this... October, right, October of this year, the end of October of this year is when the exchanges are all supposed to be set up.
Right.
But January 1st, 2014 is when everything kicks in. But you're absolutely right. The for-profit insurance companies do have to be reined in. And the fact of the matter is, along the lines of something Sandra and I were talking about last night, we're finding out more and more, Andy, that this notion of this antiquated notion of there being 50 sovereign countries, which are the states, who make their own laws with regard to marriage, who make their own laws with regard to insurance, who make their own laws with regard to driver's licenses, blah, 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 is proving to be, and has proven to be, wildly unmanageable. I mean, I got two separate cases in the stacks right now of states enacting nullification statutes. Kentucky just did it today, saying, here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, no law passed by the federal government going to have no effect about our ability to keep armed bears. Well, that was settled in that little dust-up between 1861 and 1865.
You thought so, anyway.
Because, I mean, it's pretty clearly stated that federal law is the law of the land, and that state law cannot trump federal law. But never mind the fact that this is something from 1829. They're going to do it anyway.
Right.
And Montana, you know, we had a Montana story earlier. Well, they've done it, too. I got it sitting right here. Both houses passed the bill back in 2011, and it's back again. A bill that would require federal agents to seek the permission of county sheriffs before they enforced a federal law.
Yeah. Totally antithetical to our Constitution. Ridiculousness. And they should know that.
Well, that's why I've coined this term a cold...
Federal courts come down and tell them, get rid of this. Go rewrite this or something.
But that's why I've coined this term going forward, that we are in a cold civil war.
Yeah.
If we can talk about the relationship between the U.S. and the Soviet Union between the end of World War II and the fall of the Soviet Union as being a Cold War, well, I think it's pretty clear that the likes of Ted Cruz and Louis Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann and, you know, these ALEC-driven, Adelson-funded, Koch brothers-directed neo-Confederates... I mean, this is a cold civil war, Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, when an idiot stands up in Texas and says, I don't even want to be in the same union with Vermont. Well, hell, what else do you call it?
Right. You know, bringing up another one, South Carolina's Lindsey Graham. Here's another nutcase.
Oh, please.
You know, going in and him, too, and the interrogation of Chuck Hagel, you know, for defense secretary, and saying, there's no evidence, Mr. Give me some evidence that Israel owns this Congress, Mr. Hagel.
Can we start with you, Lindsey?
Who is owned by the Israeli government in this Congress, Mr. Hagel? You all are, Lindsey, every last one of you, you SOB, you, God, Netanyahu and the Likud own you. They own everybody.
You know, it would have been...
If that isn't the most obvious thing, and here he is making these stupid-ass... God, he's one of the stupidest-ass people I've ever heard, Lindsey Graham. Where do they find these a-holes?
What would you pay? What would you have paid, Andy, if Chuck Hagel had just padded a little file folder next to him and said, well, Senator Graham... I got some pictures that Mossad gave me of you and a little rent boy here.
But God, if a more ridiculous comment I mean, Chuck Hagel, you say the truth, man, and you just get hammered. And you only have to say it once because they'll remember it when you say the truth. The truth will set you free, man. And boy, they hammer him over the most truest statement there is. God, Netanyahu goes and gives a speech to Congress. What? He gets more applause and more cheering than Obama could even come close to getting. They cheer him. They cheer Benjamin Netanyahu like he's some kind of god.
Well, that's because where the Republicans are concerned, Netanyahu is as nuts as they are.
Absolutely he is. Absolutely. Everything is there. If we want it, we want it all. It's all theirs. All the land. Everything. Nothing is Palestinians. You know, they don't rate. They're nothing. And just like the poor people in this country or anybody who's not rich and not part of the 1%, we're nothing. I mean, people got to understand that. We are absolutely nothing to them. Zero, zilch, nada. We don't exist. We're just to be walked on like a doormat. You know, unless we stand up and you got to get in their faces, man. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Going back to something earlier, a reminder coming in from Randy in PA. By the way, Judge Clarence Thomas came from Monsanto.
Yeah, he did.
Absolutely.
He was another Monsanto
absolutely.
Lawyer.
Well, Andy, it's awful good to talk to you, and I thank you for everything you're doing on behalf of the AIC Act. And you know, I hope you can get a few more fires lit under a few more folks out there. And golly Moses, that'd just be wonderful.
Well, it's pretty cool being at the town hall with my Cold River Mountain shirt and the.
Yeah, hey, that thing's a conversation starter anywhere you wear it.
Yeah, people notice that, so it's pretty cool because it's not something you see in Northern California very often. And they also said when I first began talking to make sure I straightened out one of the staffers who I mentioned this before, who told me, what are you worried about those people in Appalachia for? And the first thing I said was, you know, one reason this is very important to me is my grandfather was a coal miner in Appalachia. So if you want the reason why I'm interested, these are people, and my grandfather was one of these people. And I remember his story from the hell that he lived through when he was like 16 years old, an immigrant to this country, stuck down a mine shaft somewhere, you know, doing that work at the turn of the century. Because he was still alive a short period of time when I could understand the stories he was telling. God.
Yeah, over the last 125 years, more than 100,000 people did not live to tell those stories, Andy. So, you know, thank you very much. Yeah, hell, we have a thousand people die every year from black lung now, 2013.
And what do you say, like 4,000 extra people in West Virginia die every year because of mountaintop removal?
Well, we can't technically say because of mountaintop removal. That causal link's not established. But there are 4,000 excess deaths in mountaintop removal communities every year. And that's after you factor for smoking and drinking and I'll have some gravy with my gravy, and you know all the myriad ways that hillbillies have of not taking care of themselves and not having adequate health care, on and on and on. After you factored all of that crap out, 4,000 excess deaths happen in mountaintop removal communities every year in West Virginia alone. They haven't even done the numbers for Eastern Kentucky or Southwest Virginia or East Tennessee. My God, Wise County, Virginia, 45% of that county's gone, Andy. It just
right.
doesn't exist anymore. Not the county population, the county itself. The land of the county just
made it, huh?
Gone.
Right. Just totally toxic, I'll bet you.
Yeah. Just, I mean, go on Google Earth and Google Appalachia, Virginia. It's the name of a little community in Wise County. And just start zooming in on it, and then you know how Google Earth works. It'll take you right on top of it. Then just back out a little bit, and the county line will show up, and just look how much of that county is just gone.
Right. I remember I went to school in Pennsylvania. I can remember coming upon some waste sites in Pennsylvania with just rock, you know, just... acres and acres of just rock tailings.
Yeah, and now imagine 9 billion gallons of toxic waste roaring down a narrow, river valley, the way the Buffalo Creek sludge dam did. That was just a few million gallons 41 years ago today.
Right. All right. Well, hey, Jay, just one more thing. Remember to tell Jim I was on his side.
Oh, yeah.
The challenge that he put up there.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't the only one. And I know he probably hates it, but I love the Jimbo challenge. I'm a Jimbo man.
All right, Andy.
I just get a little too much of that religious stuff for me, but anyway, that's just me.
No worries. No worries,
great,
Andy.
Your show, baby. You do what you want to do. It's still a great show.
Thanks.
All right.
Take care. Bye now.
Later. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Andy calling from Northern California, and we've got Fritz on the Skype line. Hey, Fritz, you still there?
Yes, hopefully it's working again.
It is. If you could get up a little closer to your microphone, life might be a little better.
Okay. Well, we've had some interesting news here in Arkansas, Stan, with our governor and the state legislature. As in, the state legislature has totally went completely red during the last election, and they shoved two abortion bills through the legislature, and both of them were passed, and one of them made the governor's desk, and the governor thankfully vetoed the first one.
Yeah, I saw that, but what about the second one?
The second one hadn't been officially brought to the governor yet. That's the one with the vaginal probe mandate.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
That's the 12-week one. The 20-week one was vetoed today. And, of course, the swamps are just, you know, I checked the Facebook feeds, the local TV stations, and, of course, the local swamps are just full of screaming right now.
Yeah, to protect the little fetuses?
Yes, and keep, make sure. Oh, and how dare they pass laws against the animals when the little babies are being aborted and killed? Good grief!
What?
Yes.
It's early for it's might early for me to start drinking, Fritz. But yeah.
I don't mean you to get to drinking. Hey, it's, and but this is what's bad. My local state legislator voted to pass this piece of crap bill, and he's supposedly a Democrat. This is his first term, and he won't be getting any votes from me from now on.
Have you bothered to let him know that?
Yes.
Good. Good.
And what else is going on here in Arkansas? I don't know if you've known about it, but there was a law passed to keep the concealed weapon carry permit database private. And previously, they would the names would be released in just zip codes. No addresses, no names of towns, just the area code, just the zip code and the names. And the governor was going to let that pass become law without a signature, and he went to the governor's conference, Mike Beebe, a Democrat. Well,
right.
The lieutenant governor is a Republican by the name of Mark Dar, and he is an absolute Republican doofus. He went yesterday, the other day, and signed that bill, with the governor being out of town since he was the acting. Since under Arkansas law, when the governor is physically out of the state of Arkansas, then the lieutenant governor assumes the duties of the governor.
Oh dear.
Yes, and Governor Beebe was pissed about it.
As he rightfully should be.
Absolutely. But it's still not looking good here in Arkansas. Back to the abortion bill. In Arkansas, it only takes a simple majority to override a veto. So me and the other taxpayers of Arkansas is going to be paying for these lawsuits that's going to be brought about by these so-called fiscal conservatives who in the name of protecting the unborn, are going to cost the taxpayers of the state of Arkansas millions of dollars. Go figure.
Yeah, in legal fees.
Absolutely. But there was some, I did have some good news to tell you about. About 5 weeks ago, went to see the Drive-By Trucker Show in Little Rock.
Did you?
Yes, it was wonderful.
They put on a hell of a show, don't they?
Yeah, I was just blown away by it. Just wished it had been a longer show. It was an hour and a half, and there was a little encore, a little bit of an encore, about three songs after that. I mean, they could have went on for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. No, I haven't been to, I've only been to one trucker show ever, and I keep hoping the opportunity will present itself to go to another. It's amazing. It's electric. And well, if you've never seen one, you just don't know. But now you understand why I say that.
You know, it's they're good. And as I talked to some of my coworkers, as you went to what? I said, yes, I went to the Drive-By Truckers. You need to check them out. And it's just a lot going on here in Arkansas, and I just wish there I had more good news to say, but it's just not in a good situation. Oh, and also, while it's on my mind, and it's been basically buried by the local media here, there was one story out of the somewhat liberal-leaning Arkansas Times weekly newspaper about this a few weeks ago, and it was concerning some sand mining in the Ozark Mountains.
Oh, no.
Yes. And the words mountaintop removal techniques, and my ears perked up when I seen that.
Really? It was actually described that way?
It was described that way. I'll have to find the article and send it and send you a link to
it. Well, see, this sand mining business just drives me batty because I first heard about this when I went up to Wisconsin, Fritz. Nobody can really know what fracking techniques are because all the companies say that the poisons they use are entirely proprietary, and well, you know, we don't need the little people knowing about that, right?
Right.
So, but it turns out that even if you don't have frack gas under you, you might have some sand they'd like to use, and so they're blowing the snot out of a portion of Wisconsin to get sand, which they then put on rail cars and ship to the fracking areas and use the sand for the fracking. But in the meantime, yeah, it's mountaintop removal techniques that are used. You know, it's the same blast it, poison the air, poison the water, and we keep hammering away trying to get people, because poisoning water is easy to get your head around. But poisoning the air with dust, not so much, because, you know, we think about air pollution and we think about, well, you know, like that picture of Beijing from a couple of weeks ago that looked like something straight out of Blade Runner.
Well, it's a dirty little business they do out in isolated areas, and it flies under the radar, and the media, they're more concerned about the case of, you know, the usual crime blotter in Little Rock or some sensationalist, you know, little case going on somewhere, but, you know, blowing up the Ozark Mountains, that's not affecting us here in Little Rock.
But God, the Ozarks are a tourism magnet for Arkansas, are they not?
Yes. That is basically at least a fourth of the state of Arkansas. I mean, it's stretching from, you know, the Fort Smith area north of the Arkansas River to near the Little Rock area, and all the way almost near Jonesboro.
They go on up into Missouri. I know that for a fact. And so people, well, you know, what's a mountain here or there? And that goes back to what Rand Paul said about Eastern Kentucky. I don't think anybody's going to mind if a mountain or two gets taken down. It's good for jobs.
Well, that's the attitude they have. And these are the same people who freak out about the fetuses, don't give a tinker's damn about their children being, you know, exposed to all the mine dust and the silica and the water being poisoned.
Yeah,
you know,
with all the with
jobs.
Yeah, with the blasting that goes on, it's time to learn that big mouthful of word, big mouthful of chemical word, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, because they're what you get when all of the stuff doesn't blow up, and all of the stuff never blows up. And I mean, just look them up and find out how many carcinogenic materials are in there, and then start asking questions. You know, what about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons from the blasting residue? What happens when that lands in our yards and on our gardens? And it was, well, there's nothing to worry about. Then you can go to ACAC.org, Fritz, and you can hand them the study about particulate matter from blasting, and they'll say, oh, no, it actually goes in the soil.
Well, I'm gonna do some more research on this. I don't think there's enough attention being brought to this, and there's just folks need to know about this. And as long as our local media just ignores it, it's going to be ignored, and the powers that be are going to just shove this down because they know that. In Wisconsin, there's more regulation, and that was one of the things brought up in this one article, was that these companies are quietly coming to Arkansas because there's more regulation of this in Wisconsin at present, and they can come to Arkansas and
as they please.
What?
Yeah, they can go to Arkansas and do as they please, and that is also why Wisconsin's environmental law is only days away from being gutted and rewritten by the Republican majorities up there. Because they want to just fling Pandora's box wide open.
You know, it's all, you know, they don't care. I mean, they thinking they're going to be raptured out in 10 to 20 years, so the hell is everything.
Oh, please. Not the rapture. It's not Wednesday yet, Fritz.
I know, but that's the mentality down here.
Oh, no, you don't have to tell me. Oh, I know. Enough to make you eat dirt and run rabbits.
I know. But at least I'm not going to have to worry about getting the MREs and the water filters out for right now. But yeah. It could come to that.
Yeah, it could. It could.
Crazy folks.
Well, so are y'all all settled in? Now it's only February, mind you, but you are in the SEC. Are y'all talking about the coming season for the Hogs?
Oh, we're talking basketball?
No, well, I mean, yeah, we're in the middle of basketball, but no, you got a new coach coming in, and because you got him from Wisconsin, didn't you?
Oh, we did. I really haven't been keeping much attention with that lately. Been following basketball a little bit more,
How are they doing?
Fair to middling. They're not going to be in a tournament. I would say they would probably be an NIT team at this point.
Beat staying home.
Yeah. But this is the biggest down period that the Razorback basketball's had, probably since I was a little kid.
That's good. Yeah, and that's tough to stomach.
That was a long. I've kind of got to see the rise of things and then the decline, and maybe this decline won't happen as long. But I'm optimistic with that. Can't be optimistic about a lot of other things going on here in Arkansas.
You got to have something to hang on to, Fritz.
You got to have something to hang on to. That's right.
Well, listen, it's awful good hearing from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
All right. You take care.
All right. Later, Fritz. Our buddy Fritz calling, as you can tell, from Arkansas. There's That's why I try to talk about mountaintop removal as much as I do. We have always known here in Appalachia that sooner or later that filthy business would break out. And it has. And it doesn't have to be coal. You can blow up America for anything that you think you can wrench a dollar out of it with. It might be iron ore. It might be freaking sand. We're down to mining sand in America now. Got that? Well, you know, if they happen to run into something like maybe some vanadium or a little bit of gold or copper or something, more the merrier. We'll just get a new permit, right? Sheesh. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Lines are open, 304-658-3333 if you do want to jump into the conversation. And the Skype line is open as well. Being as how it is Tuesday, however, this 26th of February, 2013, I would be remiss if we did not take time to check in with our buddies, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It's time for the Green News Report. So we will do that and come right back and hopefully line up your calls. I might mention that there are, and I hate to say this when somebody sticks their neck out and puts a challenge on the table, like Sal did this evening, there are no responses. There are no takers for Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge. And he's offered to cover the first $50, double the first $50 that come through the door this evening, and we're still waiting for the first of them. So maybe give that some consideration during the break. Yeah, I think he did, Ron. Ron just wrote in, Ron and Raleigh said, did Fritz say that the lieutenant governor's name is Mark Dark? He said, if so, it sounds like a black porn star. Ron! Y'all just live to try to get me in trouble, don't you? But we will. We'll take a break and you light up the phones and we'll have some nice conversation to wrap up this Titanic Tuesday. Otherwise, I might feel a filibobster coming on. It's your choice. This is the horn.
It's Tuesday, February 26, 2013.
Punishing blizzard is hitting the country hard, right through the heartland.
Here we go again, another historic storm.
This is the 33rd consecutive week that we've been over 50% of the country in drought conditions.
But it's not enough to end our historic drought. BP finally goes to trial for the oil disaster in the Gulf. China and Estonia move forward on renewable energy innovation. Plus,
we know we're playing Russian roulette with our climate. I believe you have to take action.
California Governor Jerry Brown says fighting climate change is a boon, not a bust, for the economy.
All of those boons and busts straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Dealing with climate change can be a big stimulus.
I know I'm stimulated. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, yet another huge storm marching through the Midwest.
Yes, I know. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
And how bad is our current drought across the country if all of these storms that we've been seeing over the past 6 months have not taken care of the drought?
I know. We'll get to that in a moment, too.
I'm just chomping at the bit.
I know. But first, greed devastated the Gulf. That was the prosecution's opening argument in the federal civil trial of oil giant BP that began in New Orleans, Louisiana on Monday to determine civil charges and fines for the worst offshore oil spill in the nation's history in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010. The first witness who consulted with BP on risk management testified that BP's corporate culture prioritized cost cutting over safety. BP faces maximum civil fines of up to $17 billion if they are found to have acted with gross negligence in violating the Clean Water Act. BP is reportedly said to be pushing for a settlement that designates damages as penalties for environmental damage rather than fines for violating the Clean Water Act, because penalties are tax deductible and fines are not.
2 points come to mind here. One, I'm frankly amazed that they made it into court, that they didn't strike a settlement before getting there, and so that's good. Two, it should be said, this is the civil trial. On the criminal charges, BP pled guilty to 11 counts of manslaughter, and yet nobody went to jail.
That's correct. It's the second major snowstorm in a week that's now pummeling the Midwest.
20 states now, from the Lone Star State all the way up to Michigan, with storm watches and warnings this evening.
It's the latest in a string of record storms in the eastern half of the U.S. in just the last 6 months. The National Weather Service called this week's blizzard, quote, truly historic. Wichita, Kansas, for example, broke its 100-year-old February snowfall record in just 6 days. Unfortunately, the string of major snowstorms is still not enough to end the historic drought gripping the Midwest. Federal officials are now projecting that large parts of the country will face water shortages this summer. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack briefed the annual meeting of the National Governors Association on Monday on two new USDA studies, bluntly warning them that more long-term economic losses are ahead for the agriculture industry due to extreme weather events.
The world around us is indeed getting warmer. And the result of that will be more intense weather patterns and circumstances, longer droughts, more flooding, more severe storms, which will have an adverse impact on crop production and livestock, and it will likely lead to increased tree mortality, which in turn increases the risk of wildfire.
Another similar warning that I'm sure the governors can't wait to ignore back in their home states.
They're not all ignoring it. California Governor Jerry Brown, also speaking at the National Governors meeting, focused on the economic stimulus benefits of addressing climate change and urged his fellow governors to work with California to take action.
In California, we've adopted a goal of 33% renewable energy for electricity. We have the toughest efficiency standards that started 30 years ago. We have a cap and trade system, but we can't do it alone. We need other states. America can't do it alone. We need China. We need India. But it's not a cause of some kind of hair shirt or burden. It's a real stimulus for innovation.
Finally, other countries are moving forward. China's chief environment minister publicly announced last week that China plans to institute a carbon tax on carbon dioxide emissions, a tax on coal, and a pollution discharge tax for manufacturers. Estonia is also innovating. The small northern European country has become the first country in the world to install a nationwide network of fast chargers for electric cars.
It's great seeing China and Estonia kicking our rear ends when it comes to dealing with climate change and moving towards renewable energy. I'm very proud. For more on all of these stories, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider making a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves. And don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher or TuneIn Radio apps. Find us and like us on the Facebook, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the
Black water. keep on shining on.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me. Yeah, keep on shining your light.
Yeah, when you talk about mountaintop removal, sort of gives the concept of black water a whole new meaning, doesn't it? This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Titanic Tuesday. By the way, following up, Fritz tells me Lieutenant Governor's name is Mark Darr. Or, I don't know, by the time the Democratic governor heard about it, Mark Dolt. Right? Fascinating article. Fritz sent it along. Controversial frac sand mining comes to Arkansas. The process, which environmentalists have compared to mountaintop removal coal mining, well, I'm going to take a little issue with that. The process, which human rights activists have compared to mountaintop removal coal mining, because I have compared it to mountaintop removal coal mining, this frac sand mining, and I am a human rights activist, involves scraping or blasting a hole about 50 to 100 feet in width and depth to access high purity silica. Guess what happens when the explosives go off? Little itsy-bitsy pieces of micro-particulated silica, which under a microscope looks like jagged glass and is about the size of a virus, the individual pieces, they go into your body and they behave like jagged glass on a cellular level. And they lead to something called silicosis, S-I-L-I-C-O-S-I-S. You can, for instance, look up the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster. Up until Bhopal, it was the single largest industrial disaster in the history of the world. Took place just a few miles down the mountain from me. A little town called Gauli Bridge was known as the town of the living dead. It was mostly black folks. And as soon as they said, started coughing, said, need to take a little break. They said, well, why don't you just take the rest of the day and the rest of your life off, because we got somebody that wants to work. Estimates of deaths were somewhere around 5,000. That is silicosis. So what happens is the silica gets into your lungs, and when the silica, the lungs being kind of a wet area, when there's enough of it in there and it gets wet enough, well, it turns to concrete and you don't get to breathe anymore. That silicosis. Being as how it's Titanic Tuesday, there are a couple or three stories worth hitting out there. I tweeted this one out earlier today from over at Raw Story. It's the story of a man ironically named Sane, S-A-I-N, Sane. Now, Franklin Glenn Sane. If only he'd be Franklin, if only he'd been named Franklin Norman Sane, then he'd be Franklin Insane. But he's not insane. He's another American lawful gun owner. Because, see, I'm looking at his picture right now, and he's white. He's an American lawful gun owner. He lives in Colorado, Franklin Glenn Sane does. He got picked up by the police on February 22nd because he got all upset with a Democratic member of the State House by the name of Rhonda Fields. He sent her a bunch of emails between February the 13th and February the 15th. They possibly also sent an unsigned letter to her office, threatened death to both you and your daughter, and it said, I keep my 30-round magazines. There will be blood. I'm coming for you. Another one of the emails that got sent was sent on February the 15th, and describing Democratic Representative Fields and Democratic Representative Beth McCann. Hopefully, somebody Giffords both your asses with a gun. He has been arrested. Charged with harassing Representative Fields and unlawfully attempting to influence a public official. When asked about the charges, he said, "I was just voicing some frustration." Because, you see, Representative Fields, who lives in a state that has given us both the Columbine Massacre and the Aurora Theater Massacre, is a little bit concerned about the easy access that people have to guns in that they then turn around and use in horrible, horrible massacres. And Mr. Sane didn't care for that. Didn't like her being concerned. That's just blowing off some steam. I was just voicing some frustrations. Another one of the emails said, "I guarantee there is not enough law enforcement or military to stop an all-out overthrow of this government if you or that..." You know the word, begins with an N, ends in an R. If you or that president tries to take our guns, guarantee we will make World War One and Two look like child's play. Many will die. Be prepared. This is all because Representative Fields sponsored a bill requiring universal background checks on all firearms purchases in the state, and the other limits ammunition magazines to 8 rounds for handguns and 15 rounds for larger firearms. Because that's an unreasonable infraction upon our right to keep armed bears. I'm an awful gun owner, and I hope somebody Giffords your ass. There's your lawful gun owner. You know, they're all lawful gun owners until they aren't, and that's where the trouble comes from. By the way, unless I miss my guess, Representative Fields is, well, before I do something silly, let's just check this out. Sorry, the computer's kind of old now. Badly needs a rebuild. Yep, there we go. You and that N-word president, Representative Rhonda Fields of Colorado, House District 42, is a woman of color. Hope somebody Giffords your asses. But see, this is how they are. Mr. Sane might have to, I don't know, offer up a Twinkie or something to the goddess of irony over this one. Mr. Sane, I guess he doesn't have enough mental acuity to realize that when he starts talking about making World War One and World War Two, what'd he say? They'll look like child's play. Anybody? Anzio? Normandy? Bataan? Anybody? Moscow? Stalingrad? Child's play compared to a pissed off right winger who don't want to shoot, who's got to have at least 30 rounds in my clip before I feel all manly and stuff. Many will die. God, you can almost hear him masturbating, which is pretty gross to think about hearing. But he doesn't have the mental acuity to realize he's talking about treason. He's going to start shooting with his blue steel penis extension. This is my rifle. This is my gun. Child's play. Now, see, that's what the kids were trying to do at Newtown when the lawful gun owner blew them away. Right? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Why should we worry about the plethora of guns in America when even with even-tempered gun owners like Mr. Sane on the case? P.S. What's Kathy Lee Gifford got to do with anything? Oh, Ron. Oh, Ron. That's my official Mary Tyler voice. Mary Tyler Moore voice. Oh, Ron. Let's go to the phones before I embarrass myself any further. Hey, welcome to the program.
You already have.
Yeah, I should probably never have debuted the Mary Tyler Moore impression, should I?
I would think not, but nonetheless, that's your prerogative. You've covered the whole spectrum tonight, that's for sure, so I don't have much to offer other than I did talk to your favorite person over here.
Oh, be joyful.
Yeah, now he's talking about sequation.
More again with the sequakes?
Well, he sort of put the two together. And so I called him up, and he said, who am I talking to? And I said, brother.
You do that way too well.
And I said, brother Boom Boom. I said, I can be Sister Boom Boom if you want me to be.
Click.
No, no. And I said, look, I want to ask you something. I said, you got a sequation. Sister, sequakes. Sequation. And the other. And he said, oh, I see I've got a literary expert on the phone. I said, yeah, better than being an idiot like you.
Is that when he went click?
That's about all he could do.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, is a sequation, is that what happens when you do your algebra homework on a boat?
No, that's what happens when you, you know.
Get dropped on your head at birth?
I don't know. Me, as far as I'm concerned, you know, he can drop his head right over the keel of whatever boat he's on, but I don't know what it is, the minnow or something like that. I mean, good Lord in heaven, what an idiot. And some of the responses that come out of that gentleman, it's just too much for me.
You throw that word gentleman around pretty loose there, Jim.
Well, I'm just trying to be decent, you know me. I mean, I'm sort of like Joan Rivers. I wouldn't say a bad thing about anybody.
Okay.
By the way, you should have heard her show last night when she evaluated the Oscars.
That probably was one for the ages.
Well, it was Joan and, let's see, Ozzy Osbourne's wife, who's looking pretty good after she's gotten on the Atkins diet, and her hair is purple now, and Sarah Silverman, and God, did they have a bitch fest on that thing. It was absolutely hilarious.
Did they destroy Renee Zellweger?
Her name was mentioned, but Joan was going on. She said, and I don't want to offend anybody, but she said, you know, I was accused of, it had something to do with rape, and she said, but luckily, the guy didn't complain. And I thought to myself, Lord, Joan, you are going at it, girl.
Well, speaking of being catty, though.
I just love her. I think she's wonderful.
Yeah, but you know what?
National treasure.
If you tune in that show, it's kind of what you expect. Or, you know, Chelsea Handler, or there's a few others like that. You're there because you're waiting for the snark.
Exactly. Exactly.
On the other hand, though, Jim, if you tune in CNN, it's not necessarily what you're there for, is it?
No, not really, but I've sort of gotten accustomed to it, so I just kind of stick to MSNBC and other types of visual pablum that that you would not believe. They have something on now called, it's about people who are have their cars repossessed, and I don't know.
Oh, jeebus.
They have to answer three questions in order not to have their car repossessed, and I just thought to myself, what in the hell's going on here?
Well, get this. I think it was Carol Costello who, quote-unquote, dated Rush Limbaugh for a while. Maybe it wasn't. No, I don't think it was. But she took to the airwaves, you know, because as David over at Crooks and Liars points out, CNN is, after all, the most trusted name in news. You know, Michelle Obama was on the Academy Awards to present the Oscar for Best Picture.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of neat.
I thought it was tastefully done. But not according to CNN and Carol Costello. She declared that Michelle Obama has now jumped the shark. Really. You know.
Monsieur Je ne comprends pas. What is she talking about?
Well, to jump the shark is a pop culture phrase that goes back to Happy Days, when Happy Days began to suck. And it coincides about the time when Fonzie jumped over a tank of sharks into the waiting arms of Pinky Tuscadero or something like that. And so to jump the shark is to reach the nadir of your experience.
Let me ask you something. What does pie in the sky mean? I tried to find it in the Urban Dictionary, but I couldn't find it. Do you know anything about
that? Pie in the sky is probably not Urban Dictionary material, Jim. Pie in the sky goes back to the great labor balladeer Joe Hill.
Yeah, but apparently this woman was talking about something that she was going to do in the back seat of her car with some guy or something like that, and I've never heard it.
I didn't know that it had a salacious meaning, because the only reference I know to pie in the sky is Joe Hill's song where he sings, "Live on hay, pray and pray, live on day, pray and pray, live on hay, day by day, there'll be pie in the sky when you die."
Well, let me tell you something. These people, the way they twist language around, they can take the Apostles' Creed and make something salacious of it. So, I mean, you know, what they
well, have. I mean, I know about Cleveland steamers and rusty trombones and things like that.
I know. I looked that one up and nasty thing.
Yes.
Absolutely nasty.
Yes.
But in addition, Joan was talking about some woman's the bodice of her. Overdressed, and she said, "Oh my God in heaven, those things are dropping quicker than the cast of Downton Abbey."
She still got it.
She still has it, and she must be nearly 80 now, but I swear she looked great, and she sounded great, and, you know, that woman has an incredibly sharp wit. And, I've always been a fan of her.
Well, I remember when people used to look forward to Johnny Carson taking the night off because Joan would be in.
Trouble is, Joan took that thing with Fox and got herself all messed up. But she, you know, I'll tell you, that woman's a fighter. And, you know, she really has come back from a lot of stuff. And when you look at some stuff or hear all the stuff, the bad news, it's all bad news. Bad news, bad news, bad news. And, you know, you look for something just to get your mind off. The Desiree, she's sort of a welcome, irreverent type of person, but she doesn't go too far.
Well, I don't think Jim that we can't just sit around contemplating the various and sundry horrors that afflict our day to day lives, and the body politic and current events.
We just go absolutely.
Every now and then, everybody's got to go somewhere else and just let it go for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when I watched the Oscars for the entire thing, I spent all of Sunday afternoon on E! Just to see what they would say, and it was just incredible. And boring Sunday afternoon, what else could you have to do? The Oscars come once a year, and I was sort of, you know, interested. And some of the comments that some of these people were making, all these devices they have for the turnaround and the going up the staircase and the 360-degree look at the gowns and all this stuff. And I said, well, you know, hey, somebody's making money out of this. And one of the guys who was emceeing the program whipped up his sleeve and said, well, my Apple Watch should cost $70,000. And I thought to myself, must be nice.
Yeah, good for you. Good luck with all that.
Good for you. But anyway, I guess you were pretty happy with the outcome of the Oscars and stuff like that.
Well, I would have liked to have seen Lincoln take Best Picture.
Not me.
Did you see it?
I have the DVD.
Is it out on DVD already?
Mm-hmm. Already. I mean, there's just been so many Lincolns. I mean, how many people have played Lincoln? I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All starting with Raymond Massey and going through.
But my word, Daniel Day-Lewis just—I mean, I saw it in the theater and I felt like I'd time traveled.
Well, I mean, he did a good job.
And I was glad to see that the set design and props people won the Oscar for that for Lincoln, because that was just exquisitely, painstakingly detailed.
Sally Field did a great job too.
Oh, she did. She brought. I don't know if you can play Mary Todd crazy enough.
Yeah, she really got kind of. Well, they had problems all their entire life, and it was, you know, losing children, and of course her background and other things that God only knows what medication could have cured. And Lincoln himself. I mean, they did not have an easy time. I mean, now they're diagnosing him with Marfan's disease.
Yeah, that was out. That was in vogue for a while, but I think that's been debunked to a certain extent. Marfan syndrome.
Well, no, not necessarily. No, it hasn't, because there are people talking about it, and then there's another type of malignancy. It has an acronym that I don't remember, but
the one thing that really laid him low was the fact that he got smallpox while he was in the White House, and it was covered up as best as could be done for a while. But he was very near death.
Well,
and so he had not fully recovered from smallpox by the time he was murdered.
Well, he had that on his way to deliver the Gettysburg Address. He was just suffering, you know, and he.
Well, that's yeah. It was right after the Gettysburg Address that he was basically. Confined to his bed. He came down bad sick on the way home.
Had a rough time.
By the way, Isaac tells me pie in the sky, the dirty meaning is to do something kinky.
Well, thank you, Isaac. I'll tell you. I thought I knew every word for doing all that kind of nasty stuff, but I'll just add that.
Live and learn.
Add that to my vocabulary and... you know, life experience, but...
Just remember to get the emphasis on the right syllable, Jim.
Oh. I will. You too.
You have a good night, Jim.
Back at you.
All right, bye now.
Out here.
Our buddy Jim to close things up for the night. We find ourselves with one taker for Sal's $50 challenge, so that means we need 40 more, hopefully by showtime tomorrow night. We try to raise about $150 every evening. Sometimes we do. A lot of times we don't. But we're close. We're very close. We are within, if the challenge works out, $200 of finishing February in the black, which means we go forward into March bravely. Thanks to all our all-volunteer staff that makes all of this possible. Thanks to you who contribute to keep independent progressive radio going. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and as previously mentioned this evening, ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go there and begin being a part of the solution to the torment of Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And what's more, it's time for Rick Smith on the Horn.